You know, Linda Wertheimer had a career in acid rock before she was tapped to host All Things Considered.
From NPR Music, you're connected to All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan, and that's the voice of Ari Shapiro and the new host of NPR's All Things Considered. NPR news junkies will recognize Ari's voice as NPR's justice correspondent, then a White House correspondent, and most recently, covering wars in Iraq, Ukraine, and Israel as our international reporter. But some might recognize this new host as the voice in the band Pink Martini. And so today, Ari's first day as the permanent host for All Things Considered, Robin Hilton and I bring his golden voice to our show to give you a different glimpse of this talented and charismatic guy.
Oh, God. Here it comes. First thing I ever recorded.
Is that really?
Musically. Yeah, yeah. It's terrifying.
Good. Close your ears.
My dear Maria, I'm here to see you. Won't you please, please open the door? I brought you flowers, been waiting hours, can't stand it anymore. So here's what happened when you were napping. I just went up for a snack. I was feeling famished and then I vanished. But now I'm back.
And you are back, and you are hosting All Things Considered of All Things. So the direct line from Pink Martini to All Things Considered, I explain this.
Very indirect line. I actually was working at NPR as an editorial assistant on Morning Edition.
Year?
And said, this is about 2001, mm-hmm. 2002. And I said, you know, there's this great little band from Portland that I've been a fan of since I was a kid, and they've never been on NPR. And so the truth is, in 2000, I think it was 2003, I went out to my hometown of Portland and did a story about Pink Martini. And I became friends with the band, and over the years, every time they would come to Washington, D.C., I would throw them a party. I would have a brunch. I would have a dinner party. And so you fast forward almost 10 years, and there was some dinner party that became this late-night sing-along around my piano. And actually, the band Blind Pilot, also from Portland, was in town at the same time. So it was Pink Martini, and it was Blind Pilot, and it was all my D.C. friends. And it went late into the night. And the next morning, Thomas Lauderdale, who's the pianist and band leader for Pink Martini, called me at NPR and said, you know, we've got this concept for a song that we want a man to sing on our next album. Why don't you sing it?
And you said?
I said, of course this is never going to happen. And I can't believe you're actually asking me. Yes. I mean, like, the answer is yes. But, of course, this will never become reality.
Let's hear a bit more here.
Better go now. Hope you know now. I love you. That is a fact. Gotta hurry, but don't you worry, baby. 'Cause I'll be back.
You know what you're doing.
And nailed it on the first take.
Only one take. Well, the funny thing is, when I recorded that, it was me, Thomas the pianist, Phil on the bass, and a guy named Martine on percussion. But the band is like a 13-piece mini orchestra. So I had never actually sung with the entire band until the very first time Thomas asked me to perform live with them, which was the Hollywood Bowl. And so it's...
Wait a minute now.
Yeah.
The first time that you ever did a performance.
Yeah, really with any band anywhere. Because I didn't grow up singing with bands. You know, I grew up doing musical theater and things. But
I knew it.
So my first live performance was with Pink Martini at the Hollywood Bowl in front of about 18,000 people.
Oh, my. Musical theater seems perfect for you. You are... Take us back. Take us to your home. You were growing up in Portland.
Yeah. I was born in Fargo, North Dakota. And when I was 8, my family moved to Portland. Mm-hmm. And... you know, I was your typical gay kid doing a lot of theater and singing in choirs and playing my parents' records in front of speakers that were at least as big as I was. Wow. And I can remember listening to all of the folk music from the 1960s, whether it was like Melanie Sofka or Leonard Cohen or Cat Stevens.
No, wait, you knew Melanie's last name?
Oh, yeah.
Very good.
I dove deep into the Melanie oeuvre. I mean, there was some serious... B-sides that I could recite all the lyrics.
You
of.
Went beyond Brand New Roller Skates.
You know, I think
she got
Brand
a bad
New
Roller Skates.
Yeah, she got a bad rap for that one. She's still around.
I like that
singing.
Song. I'm sorry. Yeah. I like that song.
I don't think it's a bad song, but I don't think it really reflects who she is. And I kind of identify deeply with a lot of Melanie's songs.
Hang on one second.
I rode my bicycle past the window last night.
It isn't a bad tune.
What's not to like about this song? You know, what's funny is that because I discovered Melanie not through contemporary popular music in the 60s, but just by playing my parents' record albums, I didn't know what her single was. Right. I didn't know what she was famous for.
Hang on.
And so
this will be in the brain of everyone.
I was a little kid when I heard this. I had to ask my mom what a roller skate key was.
Oh, ow.
I'm like, what's a brain?
Yeah, I would tell people, oh, I kind of love this musician that I just heard named Melanie. And they'd be like, oh, yeah, brand new pair of roller skates. And I'd be like, oh, okay, I don't know. But, like, you know, there was a song called Beautiful People, which is a little bit cliche, but a really sweet sentiment.
It captured the year, which was... came out in September 70 on an album called Leftover Wine. You want to play a little bit of that, Mr. Ullman?
Beautiful people.
She did have a great voice.
You live in the same world as I do, but somehow I never noticed you before today. I'm ashamed to say.
I figure out what she's doing now, but...
It's funny, I actually thought of this song very recently because in the last couple of years, I have, for work, gone to, you know, cover the story of Syrians migrating from Turkey through to Europe or people living in eastern Ukraine who are suffering through war. And the thing that that experience gives me is an understanding that these are not global events. These are real things happening to real humans that we can all relate to. And as I go and start to meet and talk to these people, you realize that, you know, these are not war people who live in war places, who have different kinds of existences that are defined by war. They're people who, in the most fundamental ways, are just like all of us. And I was recently thinking about that song and how, even all these years later, that song resonates with me because it is just so easy to gloss over or dismiss or simplify the story of the lives of everybody who invades our space, whether it's on the news or in the workplace over the course of the day. And that song from 1970, as sort of cliche and cheesy as it sounds, sort of emphasizes what I've discovered story by story in the last couple of years.
The idea that you loved and listened to musicals I Want to Tap a little more, because I don't know, most of the people I grew up with listening to music listened to something that tried to define themselves by music, and that music was more often than not, let's say, more hip or cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was not hip or cool.
But I'm looking at. I'm across the table here from two people, Robin Hilton and Ari Shapiro, and both are scowling at me. My dislike of musicals goes deep in the history of both my life
profound
and this show.
Dislike.
Profound, except for West Side Story. And so could you
except
both
for West Side Story? That's an interesting exception. Why is that the one? I know I'm the one being interviewed here, but why is that
no,
the one exception?
It hit me emotionally. That story really touched my soul.
Yeah.
Like, I just thought this is the most beautiful thing. And the end of that story and the music just made me cry. And when you're 8 or 9 years old and you cry because of a piece of music, it's just sort of undeniable.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have a deep attachment for that. I also think it helped that I actually saw a film. You know, so I saw the story and the music instead of just like most of the, you know, the My Fair Ladies and stuff like that were around my house, Flower Drum Song, which my sister insists that I used to sing incessantly around the house. I didn't see, and so the connection wasn't quite direct. You both were in musicals in some way, right?
Yeah, I did music theater, too. Yeah. Well, first of all, I want to believe in a world where everyone spontaneously bursts into song and dance in the middle of a staff meeting here. I'd love it if someone jumped up on the table and started delivering their...
Ari?
If I could piggyback on that.
I've been to staff meetings at All Things Considered for 18 years, having 19 years having worked there. I think they're long overdue for you to do that.
To burst into song in the meetings?
Yes.
I think the meetings might be shaken up enough with two new hosts without adding the musical component.
And also, I think I'm a sucker for a great melody, and that's one thing consistent through so many musicals is super, super strong melodies. Like, you think of Sound of Music, for gosh sake. I mean, that's...
When I think about musicals, in contrast to pop music, at least for me in that era, pop music would have the message, I'm in love, or I'm jealous, or I'm heartbroken, or it's a beautiful day. And when I listened to the music of Stephen Sondheim or Leonard Bernstein, it was about not knowing how you feel. It was about ambivalence. It was about conflicting emotions and tensions, and the tensions were in the lyrics and in the music. It was about acknowledgement of fallibility and trying to aspire to something better despite that. It wasn't just, oh, what a beautiful morning. You know, those weren't the musicals that I was really invested in. The musicals that I was invested in were like, you know, Candide, you know, idealism exposed to the harsh light of reality. So like the finale from Candide, like the lyrics, you've been a fool and so have I, but come and be my wife. And let us try before we die to make some sense of life. We're neither pure nor wise nor good. We'll do the best we know. We'll build our house and chop our wood and make our garden grow.
Aw.
Don't you feel like a monster now, Bob Boylan?
I really do.
So have I, but come and be my wife, and let us try before we die to make some sense of life. Chop our wood and make our garden grow and make our garden grow.
And the orchestra surges. And it is this emphatic embrace of fallibility.
Did you ever perform in Candide?
I performed in a musical review in which I sang a couple of songs from Candide. But if anybody who does those Lincoln Center stage readings would like to cast me in a stage reading of Candide, you know, Stephen Colbert did it in Stephen Sondheim's company, I'm available.
Awesome. Like you need one more thing to do. I just want to warn you, like you've got a nice full head of hair and a fresh, shiny face. That job... that all things considered host job.
It'll grind you down.
It's hard. Yeah.
It's funny. I've just started doing it for a couple of days. And it feels a little bit like a new workout where you realize you haven't used certain muscles in a long time. And you know that
Bob wouldn't have any idea what that's about. but go on.
You know that after a couple of weeks, like those muscles will gain strength. But in the moment, it's like, oh, wow, that feels different. This is really the first time in my career that I have been, well, the first time since I was an editorial assistant on Morning Edition 100 years ago, that I have been an integral part of a team rather than as a reporter. You're sort of off on your own working with, you know, maybe an editor, maybe a producer, but you're kind of setting your own agenda and deciding your own course of events. And here's a job where it depends entirely on collaboration. And there's this great team that we all get to sort of make each other sound better and bounce off of each other and inspire each other. And it's a totally new experience for me.
I used to do, I'm not going to call it musical theater, but I used to write music for theater, more performance art sort of theater than musical theater. And my job after doing that, I came to NPR and I always thought of it as theater. But every day you produce a show.
Yeah, and let's put on a show.
Right, and it's a team, a whole team working together to make that happen. And it's miraculous when it does. If anyone's ever seen a new show produced, it is quite a remarkable thing because things are really flying in the last second. Things don't make it and get shifted. And you as listener would just not mostly know that.
at least in the best of circumstances. That's the listener
they think it just happens. It's just always there.
Yeah.
We had a conversation recently where I was in the studio with our correspondent in Shanghai, Rio de Janeiro, and Moscow, and I thought, there are not many news organizations left that can do that. You know, that have staff journalists who know the place well and can just get on the line and say, here's a global perspective in 4 minutes.
That's amazing. Can you, how did you wind up at NPR?
Well, you start as an intern?
Yeah, I started as an intern for Nina Totenberg, the great Supreme Court legal affairs correspondent. And actually, I had no idea what I wanted to do when I finished college. I was an English major. I applied for 100 things. I got rejected for most of them. I actually applied for an NPR internship and was rejected.
Hear that, intern?
And in those days, Nina would hire her own intern, separate from the NPR program. And so she offered me the position, and that was my foot in the door.
Dreams come true.
They really do.
I've been here longer than you, Ari, but I watched you grow here. You've moved very quickly.
Watch me age and wrinkle.
You don't have a darn wrinkle. Give me a break.
And you look fantastic,
too.
Oh,
thanks. We all look good on the radio.
Yeah. So music in growing up in Portland, any other things as a kid? Did you listen to any kind of music as a kid that was not that was beyond musical?
I can remember my friends and I would make mixtapes. That was, you know, the age of mixtapes. But we tended to take pleasure in unearthing things from an earlier era that, you know, were not played on an oldies station. But, like, I can remember a friend of mine named Alexa Vancelo making me a tape of the Love and Spoonful. Yeah, everybody knows the song Hot Time, Summer in the City. But, like, there was a song called Coconut Grove that was just sort of laid back. It was a little bit, not kind of surf rock, but it had kind of maybe a surf guitar in it, the slide guitar. You know, I would play the Top 40 radio, and I was familiar with everything that was on the air. We Built the City on Rock and Roll, Phil, whatever, you know. But that, yeah. But that stuff just didn't connect with me.
Oh, good.
Oh, good. I can stay in the studio.
So something that
I can stay in the studio. Oh, you know what I love? I remember discovering Bobby McFerrin and Yo-Yo Ma and their collaboration. The album was called Hush.
Yeah.
And it just exuded joy. Here were two people from such different musical backgrounds coming together and making something that was such an accurate but unique reflection of the two of them and what the two of them make when they come together. I'm not sure how much I knew about Yo-Yo Ma or Bobby McFerrin specifically, but something about the fun they were having on that album really latched into me.
People think of Bobby McFerrin as Don't Worry, Be Happy, which is a great thing to think of. But he was a conductor. I mean, so their worlds, it made sense it collided. But.
Yeah. I think I was exposed to a lot of really, maybe not obscure, but wide-ranging music.
From
a lot of it from my parents. My parents actually met folk dancing in Minneapolis.
That's
you
awesome.
Do contra dancing,
I do.
Don't you?
Yeah,
you
yeah.
play music for
I play music for a contra dance band.
Well, my parents met folk dancing. When my father was in college, he actually spent a summer traveling the United States, teaching folk dancing and selling Balkan rugs.
Of course.
That he had somehow, this is so NPR.
Right.
So NPR. And I still have one in my house in Washington, D.C., one of the Balkan rugs that he did not sell. It's funny because the current director of All Things Considered, Monika Evstatieva, is from Bulgaria. She came over to my house, pointed at the rug, and said, "That's Bulgarian."
Didn't you guys take a journey?
We did. We went reporting from Bulgaria, Serbia, and Kosovo, reporting on a bunch of issues there just within the last few months. I remember a Bulgarian women's choir. Actually, no, it was an American women's choir that sang Bulgarian and other Balkan and Slavic music. And the group was called the Penny Whistlers. And what I think grabbed me about this album was that it was a version of femininity that was bold and uncompromising and these intense, tight harmonies, this kind of nasal singing, and it would not allow itself to fade into the background. That song, I think that song is Što mi je milo, and they have other tracks that are even more confrontational, has negative connotations. It's not confrontational, but it's really in your face. It's sort of a Bulgarian women's choral version of...
In your face.
In your face, yes. And so I think I started by listening to my parents' record collection, which included those sorts of discoveries. And then Portland, Oregon was... Even today, more than most cities, a land of great music stores where you could show up to, I remember, Everyday Music, and just sort of spend the afternoon leafing through record albums and discovering things. And maybe because my initial exposure to music was so varied, I did gravitate towards international records and things from parts of the world that maybe I had never imagined or certainly never visited, but sort of... You know, travel to those places through music.
And the sort of pop music you might like could be Paul Simon, right?
Because yeah, there it exactly. Is, right? And then totally there you've got like Ladysmith Black Mambazo with Paul Simon on an album like Graceland.
She's a rich girl, she don't try to hide it. Diamonds on the soles of her shoes. He's a poor boy, empty as a pocket. Empty as a pocket with nothing to lose. Sing ta-na-na, ta-na-na-na. She got diamonds on the soles of her shoes. Ta-na-na, ta-na-na-na. She got diamonds on the soles of her shoes. 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 Say she's crazy, she got diamonds on the soles of her shoes. Well, that's one way to lose these walking blues. Diamonds on the soles of your shoes. She was physically forgotten, but then she slipped into my pocket with my car keys. She said, "You've taken me for granted because I please you. Wearing these diamonds. And I could say, ooh, 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 ooh."
Do you all try to sing?
No, don't.
Okay.
It doesn't matter how many times I listen to that song, it never feels worn out to me. It always has that sort of uplift feeling. Sort of like, you know, when you're on a roller coaster and you sort of go over the crest and you have that moment of coming up out of your seat a little bit.
I'm too scared to do that.
That's sort of what this does to me.
But when back in, I think it was 2011, when this record celebrated its 25th anniversary, we got to talking about it on the NPR music team and found that every single person on the NPR music team loved this record.
Wow.
And it got us thinking, like, could you make a top 10 list of albums that everyone can agree on?
Oh, you did that. Oh, that was an online project you did.
And we ended up doing that series, but it was inspired by all the love for this record.
You remember the first time you heard this?
I don't remember the first time I heard it, but I do remember learning to drive while listening to it, which is probably lowers the stress level of learning to drive a bit, I would think. It's just really positive memories. Mm-hmm.
That's beautiful. Great.
So these days, what's life like in listening to music? Where do you hear your music? Who turns you on to music?
It's funny. Just this summer, I talked about how when I was a kid, I would sort of gravitate towards older music. And now I think it's a mix of contemporary and older and mainstream and off the beaten track. But the one song that kind of became my soundtrack for the summer, it's a very old song that I only just discovered. You know how sometimes a cover can make you hear a song you've heard a billion times in a completely different way.
Yeah.
Well, an artist named Billy Stewart covered the old classic Summertime. And I heard it before knowing anything about it. And then I learned that Billy Stewart, who died at a very young age, grew up in my neighborhood where I now live in Washington, D.C. I live near Howard University. Mm-hmm. And so now, as I leave London and move back to Washington and listen to this music, it makes me feel proud of the place that I'm living and connected to the history of that place. And I feel like it pays respect to the generations of people who have created art in this part of the world, in this part of Washington. It makes me excited to call this place home again.
La, la. La 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 la.
Goosebumps right now.
I mean, take a song that everybody has recorded and hear it in a completely new way.
That's fabulous.
This is beyond completely new way. Without carefully listening to this very carefully, it would totally pass me by that this was Summertime. I totally miss it.
Billy Stewart used to sing, from what I've read, at WUST, which is a gospel radio station here in Washington for a long, 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 long time. And its tower sits atop, and building is, in fact, where the 930 Club is. The 930 Club building was WUST. Old
His
station.
Ghost may still haunt the building. I'm sure there are a lot of ghosts in that building.
I hope so. I think about, Robin and I have this discussion a lot about, like, what is it about music that hooks you? For me, it's words. For Robin?
It's melody and just the music itself. I don't even hear the lyrics at first.
And for you, from everything you've played, it is voice. You are a voice man.
Interesting.
And you are a voice man.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
Right?
I think I want it to sound beautiful. Whatever I'm listening to, I want it to sound beautiful. I can get really into a great rhythm or a fantastic, compelling lyric, but what will keep me coming back to an album is that it just sounds beautiful.
Is there music, like, because there's music that is kind of ugly music or harsh music, but that I still love. But is, you know, like some metal music or things like that. Is there anything in your world that
say,
you listen to?
Yeah, I mean, if I really I run a lot. And so if I really want to run hard, it'll be sort of like electro dance synth pop. Mm-hmm. And I am not ashamed to be a fan of, you know, Robin, for example, Swedish pop. Should I be ashamed?
No.
I thought you were talking about me.
Robin Hilton. I'm a big fan of Robin Hilton.
I'm a fan of yours, and I just thought, you know.
Play us a tiny bit of a Robin song.
Oh, how about Indestructible, which I actually put on a bicycling playlist for NPR Music once.
Ari's just dropped to the floor and is cranking out push-ups right now.
I mean, you know, it's a little embarrassing to start off talking about Stephen Sondheim and Leonard Bernstein and then come around to Robin, but the truth is...
That's who we are.
Yeah. All right, here it comes. Get up out of your seat, Bob.
We talk a lot about music for the brain, the body, and the heart, and, you know, this music's for the body.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah, totally.
The feet. Let's pick one more song before you go do your job.
Well, if I had to choose an album that came out this year that I have had on nonstop repeat, and it is actually thanks to you because I discovered it through NPR Music.
Oh, he listens to us.
I do. Huh? I'm big fans. I got to tell you, I was more nervous about doing this than anything that I have done for All Things Considered. I feel like the nerd who's been invited to sit at the cool kids' lunch table half an hour.
It's true. You should have been. Big time stuff here.
The album that I have had on constant repeat this year is Asaf Avidan, Gold Shadow. And it kind of combines threads of all of these different... I mean, I think, Bob, when you first wrote about it, you said, like, there are bits of Janis Joplin and bits of Leonard Cohen and bits of Amy Winehouse, and it sort of diminishes
Billie
somebody
Holiday.
To compare them to all of these other people, but he brings something unique to it, and it's a combination of beautiful music and incredible vocal talent, and I really think the whole album's fantastic.
And again, the voice.
He is the voice. He has an astounding voice.
Great. Thank you so much. I look forward to hearing your voice on All Things Considered. It's one of the most amazing news shows ever. You're going to feel so good being there and inform so many people and make so many people happy. I'm looking forward to... Who are you looking forward to interviewing, by the way?
Oh, my God.
Do you have any like...
It's a cop-out, but my favorite interviews have always been the people who are not the bold-faced names. And I know that's a cliche answer, but when I think back to the interviews that have meant the most to me, that have stuck in my mind the most, that have stuck in listeners' minds the most, it's not the politician or the movie star or the pop artist. It's the person nobody's ever heard of before.
That's fantastic. I look forward to discovering that as a listener with you. Let's play some Asaf Avidan. What are we going out on here, Mr.
How about Over My Head?
Sounds great.
Perfect.
Thank you guys so much.
Thanks, Ari.
Thanks,
cheers.
Ari.
Good
and,
luck.
And congrats.
Yeah, it's really exciting. For NPR Music, it's All Songs Considered.
Baby, I'm coming back home. baby, I'm yours. A shattered, broken past that could not reconcile. Darkness stared at me. Oh no, I love spelled carelessly. Then you turn the light like a moth in the night. You know, baby, I'm coming back.